Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Harris Cherokee Resort. Find us online at caesars.com/harris-cherokee.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
We have a lot of young people that listen to our show, people who are in college now, fresh out of college, in some cases maybe even younger than that. And listen, I know plenty of young people in my life, and one of the things that young people sort of hate to hear is people who kind of look like me, a little bit of gray in the hair, you know, whatever else, start talking about, back in my day, things were so much better. But let's face it, if you're in your kind of 30s, 40s, maybe even older than that, you do have a tendency to think that your era, whatever era you came up in, was the best for whatever reason. And listen, I'm probably no different in that. However, there's one aspect of my life growing up in which I believe I probably did have it better than people do now. I do believe sometimes I call myself a child of the 80s, a child of the 90s. I was a true child in the 80s, elementary school, things like that. I went to high school in the 90s. But, you know, as someone who kind of grew up as a child in the 80s, I think we would all agree that was the best era ever for sports movies, the kind of movies that take place that are, you know, about sports, right? I just feel like that there are still sports movies now. The Creed movies come to mind, things like that. But I don't feel like they're the cultural touchstones the way that the sports movies of the 80s would be. In fact, one of my favorite sports movies from the 1980s was the movie Hoosiers. Now, listen, you know, when you look back on that and kind of all the things that were kind of going on with that movie, there's one moment in particular that always kind of, you know, captures my imagination. At one point in time, it's a basketball movie, for those of you who don't know. The main character is a guy named Norman Dale, played by Gene Hackman. And at one point in time, you know, in the early portion of the movie, Norman Dale's trying to get control of his team, and he's trying to show them that he's the coach, and they have a small roster anyway. A guy fouls out, they're down to five players, but the guy that's on the bench is a guy that Dale's trying to reach and, you know, kind of coach up a little bit, so he won't put him on the he won't put him in the game. He says to the referee, when the referee says, "Are you going to play with four?" Dale, the coach, says, "My team's on the floor." In other words, I'm fine with playing with four because I don't want to play with this guy right here. Now, for people my age, you know, when that happens in the movie, all of our dads are like, "See, that's what good coaching's all about right there. You know, that's the name of the game right there. That's good coaching." Now, for some of us who were a little younger at the time, we're like, I'm not quite so sure playing 5-on-4 is necessarily the definition of good coaching, but our dad certainly thought it was back, you know, when Hoosiers first came out in the 80s. Well, the older I get, the more I kind of realize maybe that was good coaching. You know, the notion of, I don't need to compromise myself here. I don't need to do something I don't want to do here. I'm happy playing 5-on-4 with the four players I have. My team is on the floor. And for whatever reason, I was kind of thinking about that this morning in relationship to the Georgia secondary, because, and please don't worry about this, I said everything I can say about the Tyreek Stevenson situation yesterday and the way I think that's gone down at Miami. I'm obviously not happy about that, but I'm going to not get on my soapbox about that today. I am not going to beat you over the head with my opinion on that. I promise that. But let's say that it is just kind of a done deal. Stevenson's at Miami. All of a sudden now, it kind of makes it seem like Georgia doesn't have enough depth in the secondary. And what has traditionally, at least for the last few years, been a big strength for UGA, maybe as you kind of head towards the 2021 season, maybe that's not going to be a strength anymore. In fact, some people would even take it a step further and say, maybe it's actually going to be a problem this year. It wasn't a great performance for the Georgia defensive backs in the biggest games of 2020, but with Stevenson now gone, Eric Stokes on his way to the NFL, guys like DJ Daniel, Tyson Campbell on their way to the pros as well, all of a sudden, Richard LeCount gone as a safety, all of a sudden, there's not quite enough experience left for that Georgia secondary. And some people are saying that means that Georgia's got to be very aggressive going to the transfer market. You got to bring in a veteran player who's played at the defensive back level just to survive in the SEC in 2021. Now, on the one hand, I will acknowledge that experience does matter in the secondary. It's not just a position where talent can get you by. You got to have some experience too, at least if, you know, traditionally speaking, if you want to be great there. But what if just for a moment, Georgia fans kind of occupied the same state of mind that Norman Dale, played by Gene Hackman, the great sports movie from the 80s, Hoosier, said? And what if we just for a moment said, our team's on the floor? Or, you know, you make it more like football. Hey, I'm fine with the secondary we actually have on the field right now. The guys that we know are going to be going through spring practice. What if we just open our mind for the moment to the possibility that the guys that Georgia has, might be enough. Because let's deal with these names here just for a moment. Think about Kelee Ringo, the former five-star signee who spent most of 2020, all of 2020, injured, did finally put on a uniform for the Peach Bowl against Cincinnati, but the first year on campus for him was lost due to injury. But recovering from injury, expected to be healthy in 2021, I don't believe that Ringo is any less of a prospect now than he was when he first arrived at Georgia. There were people who thought had he been healthy, he could have done big things on campus in his first year in 2020. Those expectations aren't dampened now heading towards 2021. In fact, Georgia defensive coordinator Dan Lanning, who did meet with reporters prior to the Peach Bowl the other day, said, yeah, he definitely likes a lot of the things that he's seen from Kelee Ringo. So if you're worried about the Georgia secondary, maybe the words from a few days ago from Dan Lanning will kind of soften some of that a little bit. Here is Lanning on Ringo.
Keeley's been able to actually practice with us more and more as the season's gone on. He's not ready for competition yet, but I'm really excited about, you know, sometimes you worry about a guy that has an injury, how mentally engaged are they going to be able to be throughout the season? It's tough when you know you're not going to play a game, and I've been impressed with, you know, Keeley's attention to detail. I'm really picking up some schematic pieces of our defense.
So listen, I think if you're a Georgia fan, you take that as pretty good news. Lanning happy with the mental growth that Ringo's experienced over the course of this year in Athens, and obviously the physical gifts, those of us who've seen his film going back to Saguaro High School there in Arizona know what he brings to the table there in that regard. As I said before, experience does matter. The inexperience that Ringo's dealing with will be a challenge for him in 2021, but my gosh, there's not a program in the country that wouldn't salivate over the idea of having Kelee Ringo competing for playing time here in this upcoming season. Now, as far as the guys who did play in the Peach Bowl, I would say the results were more good than bad. Certainly a lot of challenges that Georgia dealt with going into that game, and maybe the emergence of at least one or two guys that we haven't really considered much in terms of being a big part of the Georgia secondary story. But maybe their time has actually finally arrived here for 2021. One of those guys may be Latavius Breeny, former 2017 signee, who had some nice moments, it would seem, against the Bearcats of Cincinnati on January 1st. In fact, after the Peach Bowl on that particular Friday, Georgia coach Kirby Smart talked about the things that Georgia had to overcome from a personnel standpoint in that game, and actually kind of highlighted Breeny in particular as someone who kind of rose up a little bit when it mattered against Cincinnati. This is Kirby Smart.
You know, we had a lot of guys playing out of position, guys down. It was a really tough week in the secondary. You know, we had Tyreek having to move the corner. He's also the backup star. Breeny was having to play. We had a couple days there where he was possibly out with the protocol, and then he was back in. Nobody really knows what went on in the last 7 days to create a major issue. They rose up today. They played better as the game went on, I thought. Breeny got more and more comfortable as the game went on, but it's tough.
So you love the idea of that. Kirby happy with what he saw from Breeny as the game progressed against Cincinnati. Another guy that you might could say similar things about is Amir Speed. You know, Speed's one of those guys that also signed with Georgia in 2017, and you know, a lot of folks don't know a ton about him because we haven't seen maybe as much of him on the field as a defensive back as maybe you might like. But if you saw him walking around campus, if you saw him on a Georgia practice field, he's a tall guy. He's, you know, got good physical gifts, you know, plenty of size. You'd think he was a graduate transfer because he certainly has the look of someone who's been starting 3 years somewhere for somebody. You know, maybe Amir Speed could also be a guy that plays better in an expanded role here in 2021. And there's always the possibility of this as well, that maybe Georgia's not quite done yet with its 2021 signing class. Obviously, there's a defensive back out there that everybody has their attention on, Terrion Arnold, who's choosing, as he has said, between the top three of Florida and Alabama and also Georgia. It's easy to understand what the potential pull might be to Alabama, even some home state appeal for the Florida Gators at the moment. But how about the Georgia Bulldogs? What is one of the things that keeps Georgia involved in the Arnold recruitment here late in the process? Certainly the opportunity for playing time could be one of those things, but also the relationship with Xavier Sori, the linebacker who recently signed with UGA. Arnold, in fact, talked to Jeff Sintel this week. You can read the full story for yourself at dognation.com, but in that piece, Arnold talked about Sori being here and the impact that could potentially have on his decision. Let me let you read this. I'll read it to you, and I hope you go to dognation.com and read the full story with Arnold and Jeff Sintel. Arnold tells Jeff about Sorey that it's pretty big for me now. I'm not even going to lie to you. That's somebody, Xavier Sorey, I'm close with. That's somebody I would room together with and compete with every single day. I grew up around him. We grew up coming from basically the same area. That's pretty good connections right there. So Arnold, who's about to make his decision here coming up pretty soon, says that he certainly notices the presence of Xavier Sorey there as a part of the Georgia roster. So in other words, Eric Stokes, Tyson Campbell, DJ Daniel, Richard LeCount moving on to the NFL, Tyreek Stevenson apparently moving on to Miami. It seems like that could be a calamitous situation for Georgia, to use a bigger word than I should probably use. But the truth is, it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. As Normandale once said, maybe Georgia's team is actually already on the field, and maybe the component pieces for an effective secondary for Georgia this upcoming season already on the roster, maybe also about to be added to the roster when it comes to Terry and Arnold. However, to be very honest with you here, that doesn't mean I wouldn't at least consider the possibility that Georgia could still add a transfer name there when it comes to something like that, and there will still be options available to Georgia. Let me quickly show you one of these that I thought was pretty interesting before we wrap up this portion of the conversation. You may have heard that Auburn defensive back Christian Tutt was on his way to the NFL, but as been reported, apparently Tutt has changed his mind on that. I'll read you this tweet from transfer portal expert Matt Zenitz, who said that he's learned that Auburn, this is from yesterday, Auburn cornerback Christian Tutt entered the transfer portal. He had planned to turn pro, had signed with an agent, and had started training for the draft, but is apparently now exploring another college season. Apparently that's an option that's available to Tutt there on that. So how do you process all of this? There is still a chance that some interesting names will show up in the transfer portal, like Tutt and guys like that, and there's a very good chance that Georgia could be involved in acquiring one of those guys for the Georgia roster. But if it doesn't happen, I'm not quite so sure that Georgia's secondary is going to be in all that bad shape. There is still plenty of talent, maybe not quite enough experience, but the chance of building something that works for 2021, I actually like Georgia's chances of being able to do just that. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. I'm glad to have you with us. No matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio at noon, on Athens Sports Radio 960, The Ref Podcast, Apple, Spotify, Google, all the big podcast platforms. We're happy to be on all of them and happy to have you with us here today. And a big thanks to our friends at Harris Cherokee Casino Resort for making it all possible. Listen, you need a getaway, and this is a great getaway. Just 2-hour drive from Atlanta, where many of you are watching or listening to us here today. That gets you to one of the two Harris Cherokee Casino Resort properties, whether it's the original Harris Cherokee Casino Resort or Harris Cherokee Valley River. You can experience the great gaming, the unbelievable gourmet dining options, delicious restaurants, the world-class shopping, the luxury spa. There is so much available to you at Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. The gaming area has been completely reimagined with social distancing in mind. So for those of you who want to get away, but you also want to feel healthy and safe as you do so, Harris Cherokee Casino Resort at both of its properties certainly understands that. And if you want the best available option, all the great perks that come from being a big-time enjoyer of the properties there, one of the best ways to do that is to become a Caesars Rewards member. You can go to this website and learn all about this, Caesars.com/Harris-Cherokee. Caesars.com/Harris-Cherokee. That'll get you more information about how you become a Caesars Reward member and find out more about Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. I can tell you right now, the mountains of Western North Carolina are beautiful this time of year. 2-hour drive gets you to the Harris properties, and you will have a really good time doing that. We're going to get Mike Griffith here coming up in just a moment on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort today. Before we do that, though, let's go around the doghouse, delivered today by our friends at Marco's Pizza. And listen, I'm going to be a little bit of a hypocrite here for a moment. I do understand this, but 5-star quarterback for the class of 2022, Gunnar Stockton, decommitted from South Carolina yesterday. Maybe to be expected now that his offensive coordinator, Mike Bobo, who he has a deep relationship with, has moved on to Auburn. In fact, it certainly seems like Auburn is going to be the leader in Stockton's recruitment going forward. At least that's the common opinion if you check the internet and things like that. That now that Stockton is decommitted from South Carolina, he is more likely than not to land at Auburn maybe than anywhere else. But it is also assumed that, much the same way that Georgia has been a factor in Stockton's recruitment throughout all of this, that Georgia will continue to be a factor in his recruitment going forward, competing with Auburn for his services maybe for the class of 2022. As a way of giving some context for this, let's go back to a little less than a year ago when our recruiting insider Jeff Sintel caught up with Gunnar Stockton. This is what Stockton said about George at the time and his relationship with the Dogs. Here is Gunnar on UGA.
Just the relationship aspect of making sure I feel at home and just knowing that I would fit in there.
How do you feel about Georgia? What's the relationship like with Kirby?
Going to Georgia, it's your hometown state, and it would be really cool if I went there.
So he says it would be really cool if I went to UGA, and frankly, as you might expect, I think it would be really cool if Stockton came to UGA too, except for this. And this is where I'm going to sound, as I said before, a little bit like a hypocrite, because obviously if Stockton were to choose Georgia, we'd celebrate it on this show is really good news. But big picture, I'm not quite so sure Georgia shouldn't just be satisfied with what it has at quarterback. You know, JT Daniel is the presumed starter for 2021, possibly passing the baton to Brock Vandegrift for 2022. And then maybe it's time for Georgia to start looking for an elite quarterback again once the 2023 cycle rolls around. That if you want to go back and learn a lesson from the Justin Fields era at Georgia, the notion back then that the plan is, as Smart has said, there is no plan. Just throw a bunch of good quarterbacks in a room together and watch them compete and see how it works out. For Georgia back then, that actually didn't work out too well, and some of the after effects from all of that are probably still being felt. So maybe it's the chance now to do it better this time, to say that we've identified our quarterback for this upcoming season, it's JT Daniels. We've identified our quarterback after that, it's Brock Vandegrift. We believe in our evaluation. We believe in our scouting. We think we've got this one right, and we're going to ride with Brock and see how it all works out, and then look for a quarterback again beyond that. And in fact, if you want to kind of buy into a little bit more about what Vandegrift as a prospect, take Gunnar Stockton in his own words on this, because Stockton and Vandegrift did play against each other to start this past high school season. When the game was done, Stockton did not withhold compliments for his opponent there that night, Brock Vandegrift. This is the man of the hour, Gunnar Stockton, talking about the 2021 quarterback, Brock Vandegrift.
He's a competitor, and to me, like being a competitor, I mean, that's the ultimate goal you can have, but he plays hard, and I grew up, we played, he played travel ball, we were all around together, but it was pretty cool just playing against him, and he played good.
So listen, they're both competitors, and frankly, I'm not going to pretend to know which guy will end up having the better college career, Vandegrift from the 2021 class or Stockton from the 2022 class. But sometimes there's something to be said for just being happy with what you have. Georgia has Vandegrift in the fold. He begins his Georgia classes. I think it's today. He begins his Georgia classes, and giving him a chance to grow and mature into this role without having to look behind his shoulder to a guy like Gunnar Stockton, that might be the right choice for UGA. It's around the doghouse. It's delivered today by our friends at Marco's Pizza, America's most beloved pizza. Real, authentic pizza made the Italian way. I love recommending Marco's Pizza because one of the things that I know is when you have a family of four like I do, not only is good tasting food an important thing, but food at a good price is also an important thing there as well. And that's certainly what Marco's provides you. In fact, you can get a large specialty pizza right now for just $13.99. They have some great specialty pizza options like the White Cheesy, the Deluxe, the Garden, the All Meat. They have so many great choices. And one of those large specialty pizzas at the moment, just $13.99. So you can order online at Marco's.com or the Marco's app. It's baked in a 450 degree oven. It's delivered to you contactless, touchless after that. So health and safety certainly have a primary concern for my friends at Marco's Pizza. Try it out today around the doghouse, delivered by our friends at Marco's Pizza. All right, before we are done on the program today, we have big drama at Tennessee continuing, new drama at South Carolina, another layer of that drama that we will touch on. If you're interested in the SEC, this is juicy stuff before we're all said and done today. But before we get to that, for more on George, its expectations of the upcoming season, the position that it's in as the new year begins, let's touch on all of that right now. Mike Griffith here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. And it's, of course, great to have you with us.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
All right, happy to have Mike Griffith here on our Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. Obviously, a lot to talk to Mike about. as Georgia starts to show up very high on the list. A lot of these way too early top 25s and everything like that. So we'll have some fun with that before we're done here on the program today. But Mike, let me bring you in on a topic I was just addressing before we get to anything else. You and I don't talk recruiting a ton, but I think when it comes to a recruiting philosophy, what Georgia's kind of done in the past is let's collect as many good players as possible and let's just sort of see how it works out. And there is certainly a, you know, line of thought that would suggest that's the right way to go about your business because, you know, sometimes scouting reports can be imprecise and who really knows how a lot of this kind of stuff is going to shake out. You want to give yourself a lot of options. But sometimes at quarterback, it's better to have a plan than not have a plan, to kind of borrow a phrase that Smart has used before. So when it comes to a 2022 name like Gunnar Stockton, knowing that he comes the year after a guy like Brock Vandegrift, I've kind of suggested, which is not to say I'd turn down a chance to get Stockton if Georgia could get him, but I've kind of suggested, hey, you know, maybe just go with what you have for right now. JT Daniel possibly passing the baton to Brock Vandegrift after that, you know, giving Vandegrift a chance to breathe a little bit, maybe looking for an elite quarterback again in the 2023 cycle. That's what some programs seem to do. Seems to work out okay for them when they do. Maybe Georgia should do that as well. Where would you come down on a discussion like that?
I just think about what Dabo Sweeney said a couple of years ago, and he said he doesn't recruit backup quarterbacks. And I don't know where Carson Beck stands. I know we've talked about it before. He won the largest classification level in Florida, played much better competition level than Brock Vandegrift, doesn't have the ratings that Brock Vandegrift had. To your point, you know, we don't know a lot about ratings, but obviously I think we've seen enough of Brock Vandegrift to feel good about him, but I think we felt good about Carson Beck too. So I could see the logic. It boils down to what does Georgia think about Carson Beck? Is he a viable option if something were to happen to Vandegrift in the future? Or vice versa, is Brock Vandegrift a guy that, you know, they recruited thinking, you know, that he would be a slam dunk? I don't think he ever turned down talent, though, at a place like Georgia or Alabama or Clemson. I mean, I think you're going to have a revolving door at quarterback regardless of, you know, the talent level. You look at the name slips me right now, but you look at the Clemson backup last year that transferred to Duke. I remember when I was down the national championship. Yeah. You know, he ends up playing somewhere else. But, you know, you never know who's going to be the next man up. And even though we talk about all the talent that Georgia's brought in, they were still playing with a guy that they thought was a four stringer and a walk on at one point this season, with the season in the balance. And you wonder, what if they would have had one more five-star, you know, in the program at that point. So I don't know. That's a tough one. Roster management this offseason is particularly challenging because of the senior staying. You know, guys, I still don't think we've heard from Zamir White, which may not be a coincidence. He may not want it after he's staying. He may recognize that, you know, there's going to be discussion about that if he stays. So there's a lot to think about. I mean, if you do take a guy at Stockton, then who do you subtract, right? Because there's only 85, and we know they've had a challenging time getting down to that number.
Yeah, I mean, as I said before, I'm a hypocrite on this because if Georgia could get Gunnar Stockton, I'd be thrilled about it because, as you said before, you don't turn down a chance to get elite players. I believe that Stockton is, but I think that Vandegrift also has a chance to be that as well. Not a guarantee. I don't know what Vandegrift's college career is going to look like, but to go back to a name that you mentioned before, the reason why I'm a lot more comfortable talking about Vandegrift as a potential starter fairly early in his Georgia career, maybe to start the 2022 season, in a way that I'm not comfortable talking about that when it comes to Carson Beck, is they are a different level of recruit. And that's not always an exact science, but when it comes to guys who take over and have success as an inexperienced player, there are more examples of guys who look like the recruiting profile of Vandegrift doing that than there are guys who look like the recruiting profile of Carson Beck doing that. If you think about Beck's, you know, pathway to success at Georgia, I think it probably mirrors a lot more what Kyle Trask did at Florida or what Mac Jones did at Alabama, where if you wait your turn and you learn, you could be in eventually a position to succeed the way that both those guys had great success this year. But frankly, if you think about a 2022 starter, just given the difference in profiles as players, I would lean more in the direction of Vandegrift on that than I would probably Beck.
Yeah, you know, I can understand that. You know, it's interesting, though. A year ago at this time, we were talking a lot about Carson Beck being the guy and slam dunk, and he got to campus, and he needs to get a little bigger, stronger, but he's had a year in the program. So, it's really hard to know, B.A. I think we'll know a lot more after spring. And I think there'll be a lot more movement after spring. You know, one of the things that I would remind everybody of is, you know, we're talking about, oh, my gosh, what can they get in the portal right now? Well, this is Portal A, and there'll be a Portal B after spring. There's going to be more movement coming and going from Georgia after the spring football session. So as much as you'd like to have everything and be holding all your cards going into the spring, that's just not the world we live in, and it certainly isn't the world that a championship program is. You know, let's face it, Kirby Smart with Todd Monken and JT Daniels and George Pickens for another year. You know, this is a window here. I don't know enough about Brock Vandergriff or Carson Beck to say that 2022 looks as good as 2021, right? You know, you got Jordan Davis back for one more year. That's big. You know, you got Devontae Wyatt back for one more year, and you know, you got Nakobe Dean for one more year. But if you look at 2022, you might start hyperventilating a little bit.
Well, put a pin in that because I do want to talk about that. But let me get to one thing before we get there, and it's actually a pretty good transition on what you said about the transfer portal a moment ago. There are obviously, Mike, a lot of Georgia fans who want to see Georgia use the portal when it comes to the situation at the secondary. Now, listen, I've talked a ton already over the last few days with the Tyreek Stevenson situation. I'm not happy about the way that played out, but at this point in time, I've just got to move on and live with the circumstances as they are. And as I said to our audience before you joined us, Mike, that I can understand why Georgia fans want to see Georgia go to the portal to bring in an experienced defensive back, assuming there's room in the roster to do so. I do think experience matters in the secondary, maybe more so than it does at other positions. That's what the track record of recent success in college football would kind of indicate to us, that experienced guys in the secondary seem to do better than inexperienced guys do. I get that. However, if Georgia can't avail themselves of that, frankly, I don't know that there are many programs around the country that are going to shed tears for Georgia having to turn to guys like Ringo or Jalen Kimber or, you know, even Amir Speed, Latavius Breeny. You know, I think there are options that Georgia can have, if not quite an excellent secondary, certainly a competent secondary. No program is incredibly strong across the board. Maybe Georgia's secondary won't be as strong as some of its other position groups this year, but I think there are ways, even with what's currently on the roster, to have this not be a glaring weakness as well.
Yeah, and you know, to me, the most important thing is that they took away the other team's ability to run the ball with Devontae Wyatt, Jordan Davis coming back. Can't stress that enough. I mean, look, teams are going to throw the ball. We've seen this is happening. But just as Kirby wasn't comfortable with getting in a boat race with Stetson Bennett as his quarterback, I don't think too many teams are going to want to get in a boat race with Georgia next year. When you look at JT Daniels in that receiver arsenal and the running back situation, you know, with James Cook coming back, he's such an explosive player, catching the ball out of the backfield, Kenny McIntosh's versatility as well, and you just know Kendall Milton's going to get better. So, you know, you know, Zamir's a good team guy that does a lot of different things, and I think he'll probably, you know, continue to do a lot of work in a lot of areas of special teams and short yards and things like that. You've pretty much got the complete deck, provided you trust Matt Luke to get that offensive line ironed out. That's actually my biggest concern there after the beating that JT Daniels took from Cincinnati in the bowl game. But if you've got an offense that's clicking on all cylinders, like I suspect this one will, you know, I'm not ready to say it's going to be the, you know, even LSU 2019, Alabama 2020, Georgia 2021. I'm not quite ready to say that. But I do think it's going to be the most explosive and the highest scoring offense of the Kirby Smart era. And that said, defensively, the one thing we know these guys can do is stop the run. So if you've got to make a living thrown into that secondary, it's coached by the head coach, by the way. You know, this, Kirby Smart's fingerprints are all over the secondary. These are players that he coaches up. I'm kind of with you. I think I'll take my chances on that.
I'll also add to this, you talked about the run-stop component aiding the secondary. I think you're right about that. But, Mike, one area in which Georgia got better in 2020, even though the overall defensive numbers seem worse, is Georgia became a much better pass rush team this season than it had been the year before. And I think that's a good step forward for UGA. Now, some of the guys who contributed to that, Azeez Ojulari, Jermaine Johnson, they are gone. But if philosophically that remains in place, where Georgia wants to get after quarterbacks again in 2021, as you know, all of a sudden that makes the job of a defensive back far easier because they're not having to cover for quite as long. If the aggressive pass rush that we saw from Georgia this season is a holdover for 2021, led by Nolan Smith and Adam Anderson, guys like that, then also what could be a somewhat at times suspect secondary, you know, their job is aided by that pass rush as well.
No doubt, you know, and just as we talked about, you know, we go back to the Florida game and remember how the Gators had 9 possessions in the first half against Georgia this year because of Georgia's inability to run the football effectively. You know, that's what teams are going to be looking at with Georgia, right? They're going to want to keep trying to run the football. And if they're ineffective running the ball on first and second down, BA, you end up behind the chains. And really it's that down and distance that creates those opportunities for explosive plays, offensively and defensively, right? Offensively, you want to get in a controllable down and distance so the defense doesn't know whether you're running and passing. Well, conversely, if you can continue to keep teams behind the chains, that opens up the opportunities for those well-timed blitzes or those exotic pressures, zone blitz looks, things like that. Kirby bringing a corner blitz on occasion. He seems to like that. Because you have a team behind the chains, but also because you've got an offense that can answer. It's kind of like basketball, right? You know, you want to play up-tempo when you got the shooters and the guys that can make the shots, right? When the other team has more talent, you kind of want to shrink the game down. Well, now that Georgia has this firepower, and again, I can't stress it enough, you know, you got to keep JT Daniels upright. You know, the storyline that's not going to go away for me in this offseason was how that offensive line and those running backs got that quarterback hit. Kenny McIntosh missed a block. Samir White missed a block. The offensive line was atrocious in pass protection. And JT Daniels simply cannot get hit like that again. Because if he gets injured next year, you're going to have a very inexperienced number two or Stetson Bennett. Those will be your two options. And I think we've already seen, you know, that Georgia's championship hopes go down if it's not JT Daniels.
Yeah, I don't think that there's any question that the offensive line and kind of how it is constructed for the upcoming year is going to be a very big storyline. In fact, we'll kind of move on to the expectations of the upcoming season. You mentioned championship window talk a moment ago. I don't believe that Georgia's championship window closes after 2021 because I think Georgia recruits well enough to stay in the conversation. However, it is certainly probably fair to say that it'll never seemingly be easier to construct more of a championship-ready roster than what Georgia seems to have right now. Seems to have things figured out at quarterback. There's depth at running back. This is by far and away the best crop of receiver talent Georgia has had on paper to start a season under Smart, and frankly, for many years, probably before that. We've seen how crucial experience is at receiver. Georgia now has that. So because of all of that, you know, I don't know that it makes Georgia the national championship favorite. In fact, there are teams that will be favored over them. And I don't believe it's the last chance that Georgia has. But, Mike, this is a really good chance for Georgia to win it all, isn't it?
Well, it is. And not just because of Georgia, BA, but because Trevor Lawrence has left Clemson. And because Mac Jones is probably leaving Alabama. And, you know, and Kyle Trask has left Florida. So the path doesn't seem quite as daunting now. Bryce Young is a very talented guy, and when I spoke with JT Daniels, high school coach, about JT, we also talked about Bryce Young because he also played at Mater Dei High School and he, right after JT. And he said Bryce is a running back who can throw the ball. And I kind of wanted to see more of him in the championship game just to see, you know, just how well can he throw the ball? How dangerous is he? If you remember, there were a lot of people that thought Bryce Young was going to start at Alabama over Mac Jones this year in the preseason. So, but because of that lack of experience and a lot of the great quarterbacks moving on, that's what to me also kind of gives Georgia the green light. Now, there's talk maybe Justin Fields comes back at Ohio State. I don't know. We'll wait and see. Mac Jones hasn't made his decision at Alabama. I mean, these seem like guys that would leave as they're both projected to go in the first round. But if you look around the SEC, who really brings back quarterbacks that scare you? And I think that, you know, the jury's out on Bo Nix. They have a new coaching staff that I think they've done a great job at Auburn. We know their offensive line will certainly have grown up since the last time we played them. But there's a lot of changes going on there. It's hard to do it in your first year. So who's the biggest challenger in the SEC for Georgia? To me, that's part of what kind of greases the skids for Georgia, is that you don't seem to have that great big opponent with a returning quarterback in your path. You know, Georgia should be that team. JT Daniels should go into next season as the preseason first-team quarterback, I would say. And so that's part of it for me, is what the competition in the field looks like as far as how does college football change and just how much of an outlier was 2020 with these defensive falters all over the country. I think, you know, you look statistically and, you know, everybody's excited their offense got better. Well, was it that or was it the defenses were down? You know, to me, I think it was the latter. That's why I'll still take 2019 over 2020 Alabama in a head-to-head game.
So the one thing I can't go with you on, though, is the idea that Mac Jones' departure from Alabama opens up a huge door for Georgia, because the truth is, Mike, you know, I follow this recruiting stuff pretty closely, and I never thought Mac Jones would ever start a game in Alabama. I just didn't think he was a good enough player to do so compared to the quarterbacks they have, and lo and behold, he ends up being, you know, the greatest single-season quarterback in that program's history. Devontae Smith, as I said the other day, was, you know, kind of thought to be the third-best receiver of Alabama a year ago. During this season, when Georgia played them in October, there are plenty of people who thought he was the second-best receiver on the team at the time. He goes on to win the Heisman Trophy. It just sort of seems to be, and I take no great pleasure in saying this because I don't like the Crimson Tide, but it just sort of seems to be that whatever Alabama has is going to end up being pretty good. So, you know, say what you want about Bryce Young or say what you want about anything else. If he's good enough to start for Alabama, history shows that he's probably going to be pretty good. And until Georgia does it against Alabama, I got to treat Alabama like the overwhelming favorite.
Yeah, I don't know about overwhelming. You know, you lose Najee Harris and Ellis Leatherwood, the Remington Award winner at center. The defense will be better, B.A. That's one area that Alabama will certainly be better is on defense. But they lose a lot off of that offensive line. And I think Najee Harris and Devontae Smith have lose three of the five Heisman Trophy finalists. And I do believe there'll be a reload. But it's hard when you go undefeated. It's hard to go undefeated 2 years in a row. And I think the odds are against Alabama in that sense. They're, I think they'll be good. Obviously, they'll be good again. I don't know that I'd call them the overwhelming favorite. I do think there's something to be said for, you know, until you beat them, I'm not going to pick you. I can understand that lack of faith or lack of trust. And you know what? Who knows what next December will be like? I mean, we can all project what we think September looks like. But sometimes things change, right? As I said, can JT Daniels get through the season healthy? Right now with this offensive line, I don't know that I would bet on that. This offensive line scares me. You're going to have a new left tackle. I thought they played really bad against since I was very disappointed. As impressed as I was with what Matt Luke did in the Sugar Bowl last year, I was that disappointed with this year. I didn't understand shuffling three guys. I thought it blew up on Georgia, and it probably should have cost them the game. They were very fortunate to win that game because they weren't able to run the ball effectively, and their pass protection was atrocious, and their running backs faltered. Zamir White just literally jumped out of the way of a guy on the first interception. Go back and watch it. It's amazing. Kenny McIntosh, very poor effort. These are things that can happen, and those are experienced names. Those aren't rookies there. So there, a lot needs to happen for the pass protection, but I guess I'm seeing the glass half full. My focus right now is on the Clemson game, I suppose. And I feel good about that game for Georgia. You know, once Trevor Lawrence said he was leaving, you know, turn the music on and start the party. Because I think that's a game Georgia's going to win in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Well, I definitely think that you can sort of doubt some things related to Clemson and Lawrence's departure, Travis Etienne's departure, in a way that I'm not comfortable doing with Alabama because of how deep they are. Clemson just doesn't really have that level of depth. And I'm not, you know, ready to, you know, make a prediction on the game as of yet. But what we saw from Clemson in the loss to Ohio State is that lines of scrimmage matter. And Clemson has not stacked bodies on the offensive line when it comes to recruiting and things like that. And I think their lack of depth, I think some of their deficiencies there kind of showed that there's a lot for Clemson to prove in 2021. Fairly, people will say there's a lot for Georgia to prove too, but Georgia will not be the only team going into Charlotte with some questions of, hey, how well are you reloading? What do you have going for you? I think a lot of people are going to be very curious what the post-Trevor Lawrence era looks like at Clemson, and it's not because people don't think that DJ Uiagalelei is a good quarterback. He obviously probably is, but some of the other things around the quarterback on that roster, I think it's fair to say we don't know about some of that stuff yet.
I'm fascinated that you've already got DJ Uiagalelei's name down. That is the most impressive part of this presentation because I just call him DJ. The old JT Daniels rival from Southern California. I think you're right. I think Clemson's probably glad that Notre Dame's out of the conference as well. They can go back to knocking everybody over. Back like Florida State did back in the day, right? I guess There's some unwritten rule. You can only have one great team in the ACC when it comes to football. But I do think it's interesting. That being the case, ACC still had two teams in the playoffs, which was absolutely preposterous. In hindsight, looking back, I don't know what the committee was thinking. In fact, I'm not sure that Georgia didn't play the best team from Ohio when all said and done. I think Cincinnati would. I'm not joking. I think Cincinnati would have beaten Ohio State on a neutral field. That was a tough senior-laden defense. And I didn't realize this either, B.A., but someone told me Ohio State's defense ranked last in the Big 10. The pass defense ranked last in the Big 10. So should we have been so shocked that Alabama tore through them? I think they were ranked at, like, past 100. It's like, how did this team get it? Well, how did this team get it? You know, I mean, did anybody really look that closely at it? I mean, it's kind of like you bought the brand and you didn't really look at the ingredients past Justin Fields. I mean, you put him on the outside of any program, he looks awful good, but you start digging a little deeper, Ohio State was suspect, which makes me wonder, to your point, even more about Clemson with Trevor Lawrence and the way they got beat. I think that game, if you play that Clemson-Ohio State game, I'm taking Clemson 7 out of 10. I think Dabo Sweeney's mouth overloaded as you know what. I think Dabo Sweeney ranking them 11th gave those guys fire like they never had. I guess that's what's so much fun about football, and there's so much time between now and next season. And you're right, you know, you never count out Alabama for certain. I just know that I feel like Georgia's got a very good team mood. I think winning that bowl game was huge. I just think it was huge. I think it changed the entire feeling of the offseason. I think it affected decisions on guys coming back. I think getting JT back, I think he brings leadership and confidence that they've lacked on offense, maybe throughout the whole Kirby Smart era, frankly, because, you know, Jake was kind of undermined by Justin's presence. I mean, it was an immediate divider because Justin is such an incredible talent that I think that divided the locker room from day one, just because Justin is so incredibly talented. And you know, you say it's a good problem to have, but as you started this conversation, is it really? But with JT, I think everybody's on board. I think everybody knows who the quarterback is. I think he's good at rallying guys. You know, George Pickens suddenly sprung to life. It was incredible once JT got in there, and we've seen other young receivers emerge. And then defensively, you know, as much as we like what Jordan Davis does between the tackles, I think he has an incredible presence. I mean, I think, you know, people like seeing a 340-pound guy dance in practice. You know, when you're trying to sweat it out, it's kind of fun to have someone like that there. And it's also a reminder that, hey, this season really matters. Jordan Davis came back. Granted, he'll improve his draft stock dramatically, in my opinion, but he came back with a title in mind, and so did Devontae Wyatt. And when you've got two interior defensive linemen leading the way and a guy like N'Kobe Dean, who I expect will really elevate, and a guy like Lewis Seen, you've got a star and a talent and a leader at every level on defense. And I just like the way it looks. Now, there's a lot that can happen, but when I look at the attitudes and the character of the guys that have come back this year, I think Georgia's all in. I really do.
Well, I've kept you way too long. I do want to squeeze in one final thing, and you can make this very quick before I let you go. The undefeated non-conference record for the Georgia basketball team has kind of now been obscured by a pretty rough start to SEC play. Obviously, the bad loss to Arkansas going back on the weekend, but they do get some good news. Katie Johnson, a top 100 recruit, has apparently got some academic stuff cleared up. It looks like he's ready to go tonight as the Dogs host Auburn there at Stegman Coliseum. How much of a spark do you think the freshman KD can provide for Georgia?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, these guys haven't caught a break, B.A. That LSU call, it just angers me still. It was just one of the worst missed calls, and they wouldn't even review it. It cost them that game. And then Arkansas, there was two fouls on Tumani Kamara in 19 seconds. They were just ridiculously. It just the kind of stuff that's going on. You're just like, you know, there needs to be a catalyst for change. And you hope that it's KD Johnson. Now, unfortunately, you got Bruce Pearl coming in the house, and Auburn hasn't won yet either in the league. And they just got their talented guy in the lineup who just played in his last game and scored like 25 in a close loss to Alabama. So you're catching teams at the wrong time, man. It's just this team just can't catch a break, it seems like. It would be huge to beat Auburn tonight. I think the odds are against it. Bruce Pearl's such a great coach. You know, him and Crean, you know, there's going to be a lot of mind games. And for those people that like basketball and like the game within the game, these are two coaches who really, really scheme it up and really are very competitive with one another. So I think it's going to be quite a game. Everybody says big things about KD Johnson. You know, yesterday Garcia told us that he's the most competitive guy he's ever played with and been around. Garcia's a guy that played basketball in Brooklyn and in New York City. So apparently this KD Johnson's supposed to be the real deal. And even Crane said he's got a competitive infectiousness was the way that he described it. So I'm very eager to see KD tonight. It's in Stegman Coliseum. That helps. Man, Auburn, that's a tough one. But, you know, Georgia beat Auburn last year at home. So yeah. It's going to be worth watching, I believe.
Well, Mike, I certainly appreciate being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. I know you've been a little under the weather. Hope everything continues to go well with you, and we will look. And by the way, you don't have COVID. I know when I say under the weather, people automatically go there. But to my knowledge, that's not what you're dealing with. But
no, that's not what I'm dealing with. I'm okay. I'm okay, man.
I certainly wish you well. I look forward to speaking to you soon, okay?
Thanks, B. I appreciate it.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, I want to transition here to our SEC Through, and I want to bring up something. And look, it's always a challenge when I try to take something that most of you don't care about, and I want to try to make it interesting. Hopefully I don't fail at that. But there was something this morning that I read that I was pretty fascinated by, and I'm hopeful that I can make it interesting for you, because by and large, this kind of content typically isn't always that interesting for the general audience. TV ratings for the college football playoff national championship game were awful. They were the worst of the playoff era. Since the playoff, you know, finale has been on this Monday night, this was the worst that they've had. According to the Hollywood Reporter, I'm reading here, the numbers were 27% lower than last year's title game was. So a big drop-off, and I saw somewhere else, and I may have this slightly wrong, it's like the worst ratings for a college football national championship game, obviously predating the playoff. You have to go back like 2006 or so, almost like 15 years since the ratings have been as bad as they were for this Alabama-Ohio State game. What is interesting for me about this is, when you think about the two brands in the game, and I hate to use such a loaded word like brand, but you know what I'm saying, Nick Saban in Alabama, Ohio State, gigantic fan base in the Midwest, really one of the shortest list of most popular college football programs is obviously Ohio State. I think it stands to reason that this national championship game, I would imagine, was not expected to have what I will call bad ratings. The championship game actually rated worse than both the playoff semifinal games did. Maybe you say because of the holiday, those were on New Year's Day. Maybe that made it easier. But Bama, Ohio State, I would say, ought to be good ratings, yet the ratings, for the most part, were a disaster for ESPN. Now, listen, this comes in a year in which lower ratings around sports have been a fairly common discussion point, and different people have offered different theories for why that'd be the case. NBA playoffs going to come to mind here. Some of the stuff's related to baseball. The honest truth is, I'm not really sure how the NFL ratings have done this year compared to the way they normally do, but we have seen sports TV ratings going to be on the decline. Now, let me tell you why I think this matters. And I actually addressed this topic in a similar fashion around this same time on yesterday's show. I think it's obvious that fans have been missed from the sport this year. And I think it really ought to reconfigure our minds as to what sports is really all about, because there has been some discussion in recent years that all of this simply exists for television, that every decision that gets made around college football, about what time games are, when they're going to be played, in some cases where they're going to be played, it's all related to whatever TV wants, because all of this just simply exists for TV. But this year in college football, we've had everything that TV wants. The games have been on. The players have been playing for the most part. You know, there weren't really that many upendings to the schedule. As far as the regular TV viewer was concerned, the sport seemed fairly similar to the way that it always has in the past. But those of us who are used to going to games know that it was way different this year. You didn't have that conversation about where you're tailgating, because there was no tailgating. A lot of the Georgia fans that I know had no option to go to any game whatsoever. Even on the secondary market, because there were so few tickets, a lot of the prices were so expensive that people just couldn't even go to one game this year, because tickets were just, so unavailable. I mean, I took my family to the Arkansas game. If I told you what we paid for tickets for the Georgia-Arkansas game, you would laugh. It was ludicrous price we paid to go see Georgia play what turned out to be a 5-5 football team, but there just weren't that many tickets available. If we wanted to go, that was the price we had to pay, and so therefore, a lot of people just said, I'm not going, or, for health and safety concerns, which is totally understandable, people said, I don't want to do that. I'm not smart enough to tell you that the TV ratings were lower because fans weren't in the stands. I can't necessarily draw a correlation to that. But think about how much of a common thing that has been for sports all year. no fans for almost any of the Major League Baseball games until the very end. Obviously, the NBA playoffs took place in a bubble. But this was not normal sports on TV because we didn't have the raucous crowd going all over the place. Frankly, we didn't have as much media around sports this year either. We had a lot of games where the broadcasters were broadcasting from their own home. Listen, I know a lot of these broadcasters. I'm friends or at least acquaintances with many of them. Certainly, they are noticing the fact these ratings were lower with them not being at the games. I have heard Mark Emmert, the NCAA president, say that his hope is that 2021 is a return to business as usual for college football and college sports in general. I think that means if you want this sport to feel as big as it has in the past, the return of fans, and yes, maybe even a little bit more media presence around the games, maybe what it takes to make this thing feel like a big enough spectacle to get the TV ratings where folks are kind of used to them being. I've run out of music. Let me just give you a couple of other stories here real quick, and these are both pretty juicy. So Kevin Steele has now been hired as what is being described as a defensive assistant at Tennessee. He was Auburn's off defensive coordinator a year ago. He's the highest paid assistant in all of college football. I think the salary he's going to be making at Tennessee is around $450,000, I think. So it's certainly, according to a lot of the Tennessee reporters, they are saying it looks like he may end up being linebackers coach at Tennessee. That's something that Steele has some experience doing. But what I'm more interested in is how the hiring of Steele at Tennessee impacts Jeremy Pruitt's future. We have been led to believe, or at least it has been commonly assumed, that Pruitt might be on his way out the door. And the reading of the tea leaves in Knoxville certainly made it seem like Tennessee was trying to push Jeremy Pruitt out the door. Hiring freeze on assistants, you know, assistants whose contracts are about to run out, they can't be re-upped. You know, the notion that Tennessee could even hire a coach like Kevin Steele, based on the way it had been previously explained to us, seemed impossible, and yet now this has happened. And I think the next question you're left to wonder about is, well, does that mean that now Jeremy Pruitt is going to return to Tennessee in 2021? And all of the, hand-wringing about the NCAA investigation and what may have gone on with the Marius Mims recruitment. I didn't even heard Darnell Washington's name kind of get mixed up in that for a moment, at least according to the rumor mill. Is all that now going to go away, and is Jeremy Pruitt just going to stay as Tennessee's coach? I have to admit I have no idea what's going to play out here in Knoxville, how this is all going to go. But the Kevin Steele hire was not something I expected to hear. To me, Steele is one of the biggest free agent names on the open coaching market. The fact that Tennessee got him seems like a pretty big deal, just given the fact that there are a lot of programs that would love to have had Kevin Steele. Is this enough to save Jeremy Pruitt's job, or is the fact that Steele is coming back proof that Pruitt's job had already been saved? This is probably worth watching. One more thing here. I had intended to talk on this portion of the broadcast about the press conference from the other day with New South Carolina coach Shane Beamer, where Beamer really took a couple of not even all that well disguised jabs at Mike Bobo, his now former offensive coordinator, who's moved on to Auburn. At one point in time, Beamer almost said, "I've got nothing but respect for Mike," stop short of doing that, which leads you to believe he doesn't respect Bobo, and you can understand why. When you think you've hired a guy, he takes the Auburn job and basically leaves you, empty-handed. I can understand that being frustrating for Shane Beamer. Is it right or wrong for Bobo to do? I guess other people can decide that for themselves, but I understand, Beamer's, frustration with that. And frankly, I said before, I think it speaks to, Beamer's struggle to even have any success whatsoever at South Carolina. That's not going to be an easy thing to do. But just before we were coming on the air today, something else has now gone on. There are all kinds of rumors coming out of South Carolina that Tracy Rocker, who had been hired to be South Carolina's defensive line coach, rumored to maybe be in the mix for some NFL jobs, apparently he's cleaned out his office and he's left too. Now, there's a lot that still needs to be, kind of figured out on all of this, and I've been on the air, and who knows what's been said about this over the course of the last hour or so. But another high-profile hire for South Carolina that Beamer thought he had in place, maybe that has now slipped through his fingers as well. It has not been a great start for the Beamer era there as Gamecocks coach. One of the things that he was supposed to be able to do because of his coaching relationships was hire a good staff. That was the way that Beamer was sold, given the fact that he has very little experience, not a former coordinator. coordinator, not a former head coach. So the way in which he hired his assistant coaching staff was going to be the thing that sold him to Gamecocks fans. Well, how's that working out for South Carolina? So far, not so great. We'll make that your SEC through. So let me end here with both a pitch and an apology. First of all, the apology is to those of you who have been sending in submissions for our Gator Hater roll call. My apologies to you. If you haven't yet seen your name on the screen, I'm a little bit behind in processing all of that. So I'm going to work on that and get ready to send all of those in and show them on the screen here as we celebrate the Gator Haters among us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. Also, the pitch is this. For those of you who'd like to be a part of this segment, who believe that there's nothing better than being a Gator hater if you're a Georgia fan, that a real Georgia fan is a true Gator hater first and foremost, that that's the number one rival for this program, we'd love to have you show yourself off here. So hit me up on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily for our Gator hater roll call, and you could be a winner of the Golden Shoe here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.